Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Good Sunday evening to you. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here with another edition of Wrestling Night in America, PWTorchLivecast.com, the post-Survivor Series edition of Wrestling Night in America. If you would like to talk about this show, a lot of news. Lots to talk about coming out of Survivor Series tonight. The number is 515-605-9345. If you are on the line, and we do have a number of people who are waiting to talk, or if you're planning on calling in, please remember to keep it to three questions or comments so that everybody gets a turn and we can get out of here at a reasonable time tonight. But Survivor Series now in the books, and it was a banner night for Monday Night Raw, as it usually is when Raw and SmackDown go head-to-head in these kinds of matches. So we'll start with the pre-show, where it was the tag team elimination tag match. Five tag teams from Raw, five tag teams from SmackDown. And on this one, the SmackDown side came out successful, with the Usos being the team to survive, although we learned later on that this match didn't really count in the standings between Raw and SmackDown, because on the actual Survivor Series pay-per-view, when they would show how many matches Raw had won, how many matches SmackDown had won in the head-to-head battle, they didn't count this one for whatever reason. I guess because it was on the pre-show and not actually on Survivor Series. I don't know. We'll have to go with the judges for that one. But the order of elimination was the Colognes out early via the Revival. Then it was the B-Team getting eliminated by the Good Brothers, Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. Sanity was the third team out via Gable and Rude. The fourth team out was the Ascension, thanks to New Day. Gallows and Anderson were then eliminated by the Lucha House Party, who lasted quite a while in this match. The Luchas were then eliminated by the Usos. Then it was Rude and Gable eliminated by New Day, New Day by Revival, and Revival by the Usos. So the Revival getting a chance to shine here in this pre-show match, one of the few pre-show matches I actually tune into. I am a fan of the Survivor Series traditional elimination tag matches, so I thought I would tune in early to get a look at this one. And then we went to the main Survivor Series show, where it was the women's elimination tag match that led off the show. Nia Jax ended up as the sole survivor on the Raw side. First elimination was very quick. It was Naomi via Tamina. Then Tamina was eliminated by Carmella. I was surprised at how quickly Tamina was eliminated, especially with her newfound partnership with Nia Jax over on the Raw brand. But Tamina did get her one elimination in, so maybe they thought that was enough shine for her and get her out of there before she can do any damage. Mickie James was the third one out via Mandy Rose, who was placed on the team on the pre-show, as SmackDown did have one empty roster spot due to Charlotte being called up to replace Becky Lynch in the match with Ronda Rousey. Elimination number four was Carmella via Bayley. Bayley and Sasha Banks replaced Ruby Riott and Natalya, who got into a fight backstage. And the Raw team captain Alexa Bliss ousted both of them from the team because of that. Elimination number five was Mandy Rose by way of Sasha Banks. Bayley and Sonya Deville were counted out for elimination six and seven. Then Sasha was eliminated by Asuka, and Asuka by Nia Jax. So despite the relative deep push of Asuka on SmackDown over the last several months, she did manage to last all the way to the final elimination after she survived in this match last year. So Nia Jax, the sole survivor. There didn't appear to be a lot of heat for this match, and we'll talk to an on-site correspondent, PW Torch. His own Frank Pediani was there taking in the show, so he will call in and we'll get a live report from him a little later on in the show. Match number two was Seth Rollins defeating Shinsuke Nakamura in a battle of Intercontinental Champion versus United States Champion. Really looking at this, I thought this was the one match that SmackDown could win. There were not a lot on this show that I felt SmackDown could win. I thought Nakamura was one that he could take this one. I thought that Rollins could still be relatively bulletproof at this point, especially since later on in the show they announced that he would be defending the Intercontinental Championship at TLC against Dean Ambrose. I guess we're glad that they saved that announcement for after the match. Otherwise, it may have foretold Rollins defeating Nakamura, since I don't think Nakamura has anything of that consequence for him for TLC. So, you know, looking at it from that perspective, you can see why Rollins went over, but I don't think a Nakamura win would have hurt Rollins all that much here in this match. I know a lot of people were expecting Dean Ambrose to get involved in some way. Match number three was the AOP defeating the Bar. It was Drake Maverick urinating himself that led to the finish. That was enough of a distraction of Big Show, who was at ringside, as well as the Bar, to help AOP win the match. So that's a thing that happened. That's one of those things you just got to shake your head at. This was also the match that Enzo Amore tried to take over. He was second row opposite the hard camera. He stood up. He was in disguise for the first couple of matches, stood up and did his shtick, and was escorted away by security after that. So that was maybe the most interesting thing that happened in this match. We also had a video previewing Lars Sullivan, who it looks like he will be the next call-up from NXT. He got a coming soon video here during this show. It'll be interesting to see where he ends up. I'm assuming because of the similarities between him and Braun Strowman, Lars will end up on SmackDown. Match number five was, to this point, the best match on the show, Buddy Murphy defeating Mustafa Ali for the Cruiserweight title. This match was the 205 Live show and the Cruiserweight division in a nutshell. It was two guys who were thrown out there. Not a lot of people seem to recognize them, but because they had such an awesome match, they were able to win the crowd over. Crowd was chanting, "This is awesome." They were chanting 205. They really got people on their side, and it really makes you wonder why WWE can't find room on their gigantic pay-per-views each month for a Cruiserweight match, why it has to be relegated to the pre-show, or why it just doesn't appear on the show at all. It'll help the visibility of 205 Live. The matches are winning people over in the arena, so even if you don't know anything about these guys or anything about 205 Live, their work is going to make you sit up and take notice and maybe go to the WWE Network and hunt down some of these matches and some of these shows. I think it's only a good thing. And, oh, by the way, it also helps the match quality quotient of the show, too. So it's really win-win-win across the board for WWE to have these kinds of matches on their shows. Match number five was the Raw versus SmackDown elimination match. Three survivors from the Raw side, Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre, and Braun Strowman. Eliminated first very quickly was Samoa Joe by way of Drew McIntyre. Finn Balor was eliminated next. There was a long break in between those eliminations. He was eliminated by Rey Mysterio. Then it was Dolph Ziggler eliminated by Shane McMahon. Jeff Hardy eliminated by Braun Strowman, Rey Mysterio by Braun, and Miz by Braun. Finally, it was Shane, the last surviving member of the SmackDown team, eliminated by Braun Strowman. So, questionable decision there. There was a lot going on in this match. I didn't think it was a particularly great match. Quality-wise, it felt haphazardly put together, and the segments of the match didn't flow as well as they have in the past in these types of matches. So we'll see where WWE goes with Lashley, Drew, and Braun surviving, as well as Shane McMahon being the surviving member of the SmackDown team until the very end. So now he's won the World Cup, although under suspicious means. It wasn't a clean win of the World Cup where he truly earned it, but now he's one of the final survivors of the SmackDown team. So, you know, you combined those two ideas with the fact that SmackDown did not do well on this show from a storyline perspective, And it really makes you wonder what direction that show is headed with the men's side. Match number six was Ronda Rousey defeating Charlotte by disqualification. Charlotte went crazy, attacked Ronda after the match with a kendo stick, injured her throat and neck with a chair. There was a long segment post-match where Ronda was helped out of the ring and walked to the back. The crowd firmly behind Charlotte throughout this entire thing, very similar to Becky Lynch's post-match attack on Charlotte. I believe it was at SummerSlam that turned Becky heel. This felt like a heel turn for Charlotte, except everybody was cheering her. So this was the match where there's just, as my old friend and former audio colleague James Caldwell would say, there's a lot to unpack here. You know, Ronda Rousey getting booed for being attacked. You know, how does this shape what she's doing on Raw as far as with Nia Jax, who survived the elimination match? You know, what does this do with the Becky Charlotte dynamic? Because that was a major feud on SmackDown. And this past week, we saw Becky Lynch hug Charlotte. So was that just a means to get Charlotte on the team, or is there really a reconciliation between Becky and Charlotte? Did Charlotte take Becky's words to heart here and take out Ronda? Does this mean – what does this mean for a future interbrand match? Because the fans are still – you know, chopping at the bit for Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey, but now we want to see a conclusion to Ronda Rousey versus Charlotte as well. So that match could be back on the table for WrestleMania. The match was really good, stellar, better than I expected from these two, because Ronda is good, but she's limited with as new as she is to pro wrestling. And Charlotte, you know, Charlotte, I don't think is a ring general. You know, she's good at certain things. I think she's a step behind in certain things. So I was wondering how that in-ring dynamic was going to unfold. And it was definitely on the higher end of what one would expect from this match. Then in the main event, we had Brock Lesnar defeating Daniel Bryan. It was basically a Lesnar squash for the first several minutes. Fans on Twitter were getting restless with this. They had seen this song and dance before, fully expected Lesnar to just squish Daniel Bryan, but Bryan got a comeback. He almost tapped out Brock Lesnar. A kick to the groin really turned things around again by Bryan after he did the same thing to win the WWE title on SmackDown this past week over AJ Styles. Styles did not get involved in this match, and Lesnar ended up winning with the F5 after some brutal-looking suplexes delivered to Daniel Bryan that knowing Bryan's history, certainly made one cringe. Lesnar over Daniel Bryan there. It was this match was a long time coming, and it ended up being pretty good. The show as a whole, I'm kind of torn on. I didn't think either of the main roster elimination matches were all that good. Rollins-Nakamura was fine. Murphy and Ali was good. The last two matches were very different, but very good. So I guess thumbs in the middle leaning up, I guess, is kind of where I stand on things right now. But I want to hear where you stand on things. So if you have questions or comments, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Got a ton of people on hold. Going to try and get to as many people as I can. Again, just for those who are on hold, please limit your questions or comments to three apiece so everybody can say their piece here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. We go first to the 615 area code. 615, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Greg, this is Kenny from Tennessee. Man, it's great to be the first caller on tonight's show.
Yeah, you probably had to get on pretty early to get the number one seed for this show, because it seems like it's pretty popular from looking at the queue here.
Yeah, I don't know if it's popular for all the right reasons. I got to say, hey, you know, if this was like a football score, man, Raw would have won like 49-0. I mean, it was just insane. And the fact that the match on the pre-show doesn't count, well, that tells you a lot about the pre-show. I got to say, you know, I'm torn by the show. I thought there were some elements that were good on it, particularly Charlotte Flair and even Daniel Bryan. I was kind of worried about how he was going to get. I had this vision of Brock just kind of treating Daniel Bryan as almost like a rag doll, kind of swirling him around. But no, they actually had a good match overall. But man, it's just kind of hard, Greg, because, you know, NXT TakeOver was such an awesome show, and yeah. it was like there was no contest between the two shows. It's like night and day, man. I tell you, yeah. you know, just War Games, and then you had just this Raw dominance. It's just, it was so unsettling to me. I know you like thumbs in the middle, but I just have to go thumbs down on this show, man, just because one brand just was dominating the whole show. Well, just like, well, where's
Kenny,
the fun of it?
Kenny, let me play devil's advocate there for a second. We've spent a lot of the build-up to Survivor Series talking about how dumb it is to come at this from a Raw versus SmackDown point of view for WWE. Because all of a sudden, all the Raw superstars love Raw. All of a sudden, all the SmackDown superstars love SmackDown. Like, the idea of the battle for brand supremacy for us fans watching the show does not ring true. Because there's really no point to it. There's no purpose to it. And we spend most of the build-up to Survivor Series mocking the idea of the Raw versus SmackDown rivalry. So is it then fair to criticize the show coming at it from the point that, well, Raw dominated SmackDown, that's not fair, that was stupid? Well, if you're arguing that the entire premise of the Raw versus SmackDown rivalry is dumb in the first place, how can you then get so invested and complain about the result of this? And I'm not specifically talking about you, Kenny, but anyone who has that point of view where they were one of the people who were railing against WWE for this Raw versus SmackDown idea, and then today all of a sudden finding it ridiculous that, you know, the result of Raw defeating SmackDown.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
Yeah, but I was just like expecting at least, you know, it always seems like there would be one surprise in the Survivor Series. And to me, it just feels like more and more like this, like Vince McMahon, you know, it's like almost like, you know, WWE and War with the Fans. Man, that came out to me in full force just because it seemed like, in a lot of ways, though, like I looked at that Charlotte Flair, Ronda Rousey situation, that could have been Becky Lynch doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just, and you know, you kind of look at that with AJ Styles possibly beating Brock Lesnar, if, and I will talk a little bit about Styles in a bit because he's apparently in the news over contract situation, but still, you know, it would have been nice to see one real big surprise from SmackDown to win at least one match, if nothing else, so they can at least have some sort of bragging rights, the old pay-per-view that they used to have in 09 and 010-ish time frame. But yeah. I guess we're not going to have that for at least another year. But still, you know, the wrestling was good. I thought for the most part it was pretty solid. And even with some of the outcomes being so heavy towards Raw, it did kind of make sense. You know, I think we definitely got some angles that did get set up. Obviously, but the big one, I guess, besides obviously Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose for the Intercontinental title next month, is where's Charlotte Flair in all this? You know, I think, do you think they may go triple threat possibly into WrestleMania with Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, and Ronda Rousey in like a triple threat match for even the main event of WrestleMania?
That's a good question. It's still so far out, it's tough to say, but I would say that if you were to ask me before this show, I would have poo-pooed that idea. I think what we saw at Survivor Series gives more credence to that idea. I'm by no means advocating for it. I'm not by no means saying put your money on that being the match at WrestleMania. But if Tuesday comes around and Charlotte and Becky are still enemies, then I think it's a stronger chance of that happening, because you've got three really strong personalities, none of them who like each other, and I think you could get away with a triple threat. I'm not really a big fan of triple threats, especially on the WrestleMania stage. I think that's where you should be doing one-on-one matches. You know, it's been a long time since WrestleMania has been the culmination of months-long angles. Too often it's just another bump in the road. So I can't say it should be that, but you know, I think that's as good a place as any. And that's a strong argument for a WrestleMania main event being the women. You know, the women have crossed they've crossed a lot of firsts off the list. And one of the only ones that are left is main eventing WrestleMania. And Charlotte versus Becky versus Ronda, or even Charlotte versus Ronda one-on-one, they're strong WrestleMania main event chances, opportunities for these women.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, they've really made a lot of headways, especially in this year alone, and this could definitely top the list if they can get even just at least one of the three that I just mentioned can get a main event spot would be huge. Anyway, I got one last thing, and then I'll get you in some other callers. I just mentioned AJ Styles, and I'm even watching now the WWE 365 that they're doing with him, which is really good so far. I know that there have been a lot of rumors that have now been seen on the internet over his contract situation with WWE, and it appears that New Japan has stepped up and offered a big money deal to him, as far as like the rumors I'm hearing, and also that Styles wants to work less than what he had before. He wanted a 3-year deal with less dates, and WWE is basically saying, we're going to give you a 5-year deal with essentially, I guess, the same dates as he's had before. And considering AJ Styles is in his early 40s now, do you think it would be possible that he would turn down an offer from WWE now, considering the run that he just had as WWE champion? Because it's like it's not going to get any better than what he just had.
Yeah.
And then just go back to New Japan. I mean, if you think about it, if he goes back to New Japan, that could really change the tide in pro wrestling, in the sense that it's almost, in essence, going back to WCW when guys would go back and forth from WWE and WCW. Mm-hmm. Do you think Styles would actually be the first wrestler to, say, pull that off and actually go to New Japan as opposed to just staying in WWE?
Well, I actually hadn't heard these rumors, so this is all news to me. I'm taking it in as you're telling me, Kenny. I don't see Styles going back to New Japan. I think one of the reasons he came to WWE was in part to be closer to his family for a longer period of time than having to constantly go over and do the Japan tours. I think that, you know, there's still some time if his contract is up in January or whatever. There's still some time to negotiate with WWE. I know that WWE hasn't historically been the best when it comes to negotiating and giving a little to wrestlers. But, you know, I think AJ Styles has proven how valuable he is to WWE. And I'm hoping that they're able to come to an agreement, because he's really been a workhorse on SmackDown, and I'd like to see him continue that in WWE.
Yeah, too. And by the way, the source that I'm kind of quoting this from is from something called Dirty Sheets. It's based off of that WWF old school website. That's where I found it. I actually found it today that his contract is set to expire on December 31st, 2018, and wouldn't you know, in a few days after that, you got Wrestle Kingdom. So yeah. Anything could happen between now and then. That's why I thought it would be kind of interesting how the way things are timed with Styles losing the title, which,
sure,
you know, I was shocked, you know. But to think about that, Greg, and just what the way Daniel Bryan, how poised he is now since he made that heel turn, it's almost like it was probably for the better in a sense. And I wish it didn't come so soon, but, man, it was just awesome to saw what happened in SmackDown, and the fact that Bryan did put out a good show. I think looking back on it now, it was probably the best move they could make at this point.
Yeah, the heel turn, it's frustrating as a fan who This will be my column for the upcoming Torch newsletter. When you've got Becky Lynch and you've got Daniel Bryan and you've got Johnny Gargano, three really strong baby faces who fans really got behind and they really supported, and WWE turns them heel before they can complete that babyface journey, I think, you know, while it might be in a vacuum the best for Daniel Bryan, and while he may have requested it and he may play the part well, same with Becky Lynch, I think it does do damage to your fan base as far as getting behind baby faces in the future and really wanting them to succeed. I think that's why you're seeing heels get cheered so much by the fans, is because that, you know, that's the most creative way WWE books people is when they are heels. It's just a frustration to see that. And again, it's nothing against Daniel Bryan and his talent, because I'm sure he'll pull it off and I'm sure he'll do really well with it. But it's just that babyface journey that too often goes uncompleted for fans who really follow these babyface wrestlers. But Kenny, appreciate the call. Good hearing from you. And thanks for starting us off on the right foot tonight.
All right, you're welcome.
Kenny from Tennessee drops off. We now go to the 443 area code. 443, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, how you doing, Greg? This is Mark from Baltimore.
Hi, Mark. Good to talk to you tonight.
Yeah, you know, I ain't called you in a while. Been meaning to, but, you know, live, ripping, running. But just want to give my little take on tonight. Well, really, it's more like a comment, and I'm just keep it short to the point. I don't think Raw should have swept tonight for the main reason of, okay, we're in November. Last I checked, come September, somebody got some new deals coming on. And wouldn't it be kind of cool to keep the ball rolling? Because, I mean, it's not like they're going on a rinky-dink network. I mean, they're going on Fox, which Fox has some pretty good shows.
Yeah.
And if they start the tanking, they'll get rid of WWE, just like they'll do any other show. I just don't, you know, for the life of me, I can't seem to understand it. You know, what's their take on that, if you don't mind?
Yeah, look, that deal, and I've seen this mentioned on Twitter almost half-jokingly by people wondering if Fox wants to pull out of their deal now that they clearly got the lesser of the two brands in WWE. But, you know, the reality is that deal doesn't take effect till 11 months from now. We know that when WWE, mm-hmm. they run, you know, 52 weeks a year, 3 months from now, no one's going to remember that SmackDown was murdered by Raw in the Survivor Series. I mean, really, you talk about 11 months from now, this is going to be a blip on the radar. No one's going to remember that. So I really don't think it's going to affect anything in that direction. It is kind of odd that you would book a show to be so dominant like Raw, and maybe we'll see some fallout from that over the next few weeks. Maybe some changes on SmackDown with Shane McMahon or Paige. I don't know. But it's kind of odd, but I really don't think it will have any effect on anything like that 11 months from now.
Okay, I mean, I can definitely respect where you coming from for it. It's just for me, for the life of me, it really just don't make sense. I mean, I get a show, it's about a reluctant thumbs up. Because, you know, it seemed typical WWE /WWF. I swear, for a moment, I felt like I was back in 89. I don't know why. But, you know, it just don't seem right to me. I mean, you know, that's pretty much all I got tonight, man. It's just confusing. But at the same time, it's typical of them. You know, yeah, I'm supporting hell. I'm on the network right now watching some old NWA. But
nice.
I don't know, man. It just seems to keep that ball rolling a couple months. And you're right, maybe most people not going to remember 3 months from now, but that's a big network, and they got some pretty decent shows on this year. So I just hope for the life of me that they, whatever they're going to do, get it together by then. So, you know, I guess I'll talk to you next week if I'm out.
All right. Appreciate the call, Mark. And the other thing to remember, too, is, you know, the roster may look very different on SmackDown a year from now, too. They'll be doing a superstar shakeup, no doubt. They'll probably replenish with NXT superstars at some point after WrestleMania is usually the tipping point for that. Plus, if WWE really feels the need, they'll move some big stars from Raw to SmackDown to be prepared for that Fox debut next October. So the landscape is going to change a lot between now and then on SmackDown, so I wouldn't really be too concerned about how this makes SmackDown look heading into their Fox deal less than a year from now.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go now to the 478 area code. 478, I believe this is Darrell from Georgia.
How you doing today, Greg?
I'm doing well, Darrell. Thanks for calling in. What'd you think of Survivor Series?
Oh, man. I heard you say you was thumbs in the middle, mm-hmm. Leaning thumbs up.
Yep.
I'm thinking I'm leaning thumbs down and maybe bringing in another one.
Okay.
From what I've seen and just based off of going off of what I've seen the night before and then seeing tonight, mm-hmm. just the concept of Survivor Series being brand versus brand, I think needs to be tweaked or thought about, or maybe have Survivor Series and each brand run their own type of Survivor Series matches, because the brand versus brand make it so limited.
Yeah.
But it was hard. It was a hard night to watch tonight. I can say that. I can tell you that.
What standpoint? From the storyline standpoint, the in-ring standpoint, the Raw versus SmackDown standpoint, what made it hard to watch for you?
Well, it was no story to be told, except, I guess, with Charlotte turning face and Ronda Rousey turning heel.
Yeah.
Other than that, wasn't no story to be told. I know some might come on here and say Daniel Bryan versus Brock was a good match, but it was the same formula from last year from AJ and Brock, just different. Instead of Brock slipping up and hurting the knee, he takes a nut shot, and that's how you get the 2 minute of offense for Daniel Bryan to eventually lose anyway, who kind of figured he was going to be the sacrificial lamb. And the ongoing story of Shane McMahon is the only male star on SmackDown after being sole survivor tonight and best in the world in that other thing that happened. So that was kind of hard.
That was an odd choice, and I don't agree with that, and that's part of the reason I probably didn't like that men's elimination tag match as much as I was hoping to. When you have somebody like Samoa Joe out that early and Shane McMahon survived till the end, SmackDown's booking priorities are screwed up if that's the case. And you know, you have to couch all these decisions in the fact, well, let's see the follow-up. You know, does Joe being out early make him even more of a killer force? You know, does his character get even more refined? Does he get a bigger push coming out of this? What does the Shane McMahon deal lead to? So, you know, when we talk about these eliminations and the positioning of wrestlers within those eliminations, I guess we do have to take a step back and say, okay, let's take a look at the follow-up before we kill WWE on their decisions here. But just in a vacuum, because that's all we can do here is look at Survivor Series in a vacuum. We can't take into account what's going to happen in the future. It is an odd choice there on the SmackDown side.
Yeah, because you feel like Samoa Joe probably would have needed a win or something after so many losses to AJ mm-hmm. for the title, when people felt like he should have won it. And I don't see how people can say they see Daniel Bryan as a star or the heel turn as being good, because if you listen to what the announcer said about him the entire match, even when he was coming back, they were still killing him in all type of ways and not making him out to be some type of star or anything. So from what I've seen tonight, SmackDown's other, if you take Shane McMahon out of the picture, their two biggest stars weren't even on the show. I guess they made remade another one after damaging Charlotte. They remade her back into a baby face or a heel or whatever. I guess she'll be getting that Ronda Rousey match since she is in the mixed match challenge, and whoever wins will get the 30th entry in the Rumble. So looking forward to her, maybe her and AJ winning that, both of them getting 30 mm-hmm. in the Rumble. So she gets to pick who, if she want to face Becky again or face Ronda, and they just set it up for her to probably face Ronda. So I see that picture coming up. Don't know what they're going to do with the WWE title. Was this just so AJ didn't have to take a loss and they switch it back at TLC or Rumble? Want to see what they do with Lars. Is he coming to SmackDown? Will they see about pushing him big 6 months to make him into somebody? Just a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I would ask you, Greg, if you was talking to someone who just who don't follow wrestling, who's a casual fan, and they sat down with you the past 2 days and watched TakeOver and watched this show right here, and they ask you, could you explain to me how I'm supposed to feel or be into this show after watching tonight's show and after watching last night? Could you say you have any type of explanation for them about this show? That'll be one question, and so I can go ahead and get the questions out of here. I would love to hear your feels on last night's show, on the TakeOver show, just because I haven't heard it.
Okay.
And that's it for me.
Great. Thanks, Terrell. Good talking to you, and talk to you again soon here. If I was to sit down with somebody and watch NXT and Survivor Series, they would have to know that there is, you know, they are two different products aimed at two different audiences. And that's the thing. You know, even though there's some of us who watch both, they're really two different – there's also two different goals for NXT and for WWE as far as the product that they're putting out there. I would say it's like watching NFL and college football. Some people only like watching college football. Some people only like watching the NFL. They're both football, but they're very different. They're very different products, and there are people who like to watch both for, you know, for different reasons. So that's kind of how I would equate it. I think that you're kind of missing out if you're saying, well, I liked NXT TakeOver, so that means I can't like Survivor Series because it wasn't as good. I think that's a logical fallacy, first of all, and I think it's an unfortunate way to think. I'm not saying Durrell is thinking this way, but I think there are a lot of people who still, even after, you know, after how many TakeOvers that we've had now, compare TakeOver to the pay-per-views. And I don't think that's necessarily fair because, again, they're two different purposes here. They're run by, for the most part, two different people, and the goals are different. So you can like what NXT did Saturday night, but you could also like parts of Survivor Series tonight, and I don't think you're being hypocritical. I thought TakeOver was really a very good show. I liked Gargano versus Aleister Black a lot more than I thought I would. To me, that was probably the match of the show. I liked Ciampa versus Dream. I thought that was a really solid match as well. I liked Sane versus Baszler. It was short, but I liked – this was a match that I liked the two out of three falls and how they were used, because a lot of times WWE doesn't use those kind of stipulations wisely, even though the segments were short, and that's one of the main complaints from the main roster when you do two out of three falls, is sometimes they do those falls too quickly in an unrealistic manner. That you could apply that to the NXT match, but I thought there were other aspects of it that overcame that shortcoming. The main event, I thought, was it wasn't as good as I was hoping. And part of it was the use of the weapons, which was not needed. You know, it was probably too long, and you know, the work was really good, but I just couldn't get into it as much. I also liked, for the most part, Riddle versus Ono. I thought that was, you know, I'm sure we'll get a Riddle versus Ono one-on-one match legitimately down the line, but for this moment, I thought that was a good way to kick off Matt Riddle's NXT career, and I thought it got people talking, so that it was successful from that point of view as well. 515-605-9345 is the number to call here on Wrestling Night in America. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are breaking down Survivor Series 2018 here on Sunday, November, 18th? Yes, 18th, 2018. We now go to our live correspondent who is on the scene, Frank from Los Angeles tonight. Frank, how are you?
I'm wearing a different hat tonight. Greg, how you doing? Long time no speak.
Yes, I'm doing well, and I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule to fit in Survivor Series while you're out in L.A. there. You know, let's get right to it. Broad, overarching question. What did you think of the show? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
I mean, I got to give it thumbs in the middle. Maybe, you know what it is? It's one of those shows that I gotta sleep on a little bit,
yeah,
and kind of think about it for a little while before I go thumbs up or thumbs down, because, you know, there was stuff I liked about it, but there was stuff I didn't like about it. And I think the one thing I didn't like about it is there's still a lot of tone deafness going on in WWE. And you hit on it with a couple of the callers. First of all, Shane McMahon. Do I need to see Shane McMahon be the last guy on the SmackDown team, you know, to face Braun, Drew, and Bobby Lashley? Okay.
Well, at least he didn't eliminate
Samoa any of Joe. So, you know what, Greg? I made a mistake. I'm sorry. Best in the world, Shane McMahon.
Yes.
I don't want to get in trouble. Best in the world. Okay?
Yes, he earned that.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Joe, now I don't know if he got the reaction because he's from Huntington Beach, which is only, I mean, from the hotel, it's only a 5-minute drive. But from the Staples Center, it's about 20 minutes. So he's from the area. I don't know if that was part of it, but he does get a positive reaction in general. The fans did not like that at all. They did not. They booed that, you know. And I really didn't get having Shane be the last guy and get eliminated in a few minutes. What was it, a minute? 2 minutes by Strowman taking the power slam? So
yeah.
I didn't like that at all. I liked the Charlotte stuff, believe it or not. The only question is, where are we going with it? Like, the story is really confusing on a lot of levels. You know, you have... And I don't know, and I was talking to Erin about this, because she watched at home. You know, and I said, well, I don't know if they had Charlotte do all of that stuff because of the crowd reaction, because the crowd reaction was incredibly negative for Rousey. I mean, she did not get – the only cheer she got was from the girl sitting next to me. That was a whole other story. What I had to go through tonight with this one. But she did not get a reaction. She did not get a good reaction at all.
And Frank, why do you think that is? Because she's been over to so many audiences, you know, in WWE. A lot of the live crowds have been very receptive to her. The fans have disliked Charlotte because she's opposite Becky Lynch in their feud. So why do you think the fans were so against Ronda Rousey tonight?
It's probably not Ronda Rousey's fault, because the fans were robbed of their match with Becky Lynch. Mm-hmm. So I think anybody or anything that was involved with Becky Lynch getting knocked out of the match, I think, is going to get booed. I don't think it had – because if you think about it, look at the story last week. Ronda Rousey gets attacked in the back. Then she comes out, and she gets chair shots from Becky Lynch. So she really didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the promos had anything to do with it. Now, I'll tell you myself, I didn't particularly care for the promos. I might be coming from it from a different perspective. I didn't like the flight attendant stuff, okay, or the stewardess stuff, okay? Because I can tell you, having worked with many flight attendants, they do a lot more than serve snacks. That's my own personal problem, whatever, okay? I thought the, what was it, avocado toast and millennial man and all of that stuff. The second she said that, I tweeted out, I said, Becky, you're a millennial yourself. You were born the same year that Becky Lynch was born, so what are you talking about? Yeah. You know? So I think that I honestly, what I'm getting at is I think there might be a level of frustration with Ronda, and you wrap that with what happened to Becky. I think it's just, you know, they were robbed of the match that they wanted to see, and I think Ronda just falls victim to that.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Yeah, it was that was the one match tonight where I you know, that's, there's so much coming out of that match and the final segment that you could go in six or seven different directions with, you know, three or four different women based on that segment. Was this, I mean, I guess going into this, Charlotte was a heel. Was this a babyface turn, or was this a heel turn, or what? You know, what side of the ledger is she going to be on coming out of this, do you think?
Greg, what are you talking about? It was a babyface turn. Come on now.
Well, the last time they did this, it was with Becky Lynch, and it was a heel turn when she did it. So Charlotte's doing the same thing, but she's turning babyface. I can't. It's hard to keep straight all of these twists and turns by WWE booking.
Oh, that was a heel. See, I thought that was a baby face turn too. I'm only kidding with you, Greg. No, I obviously, it was an attempt to turn her heel. I mean, I think, and this is why I brought up the tone deafness on WWE's part, because Ronda's going to go into a match with Nia Jax. Nia Jax, and we haven't gotten to that yet, clearly has heat on her. So I think in WWE's mind, if they have Charlotte, quote-unquote, turn heel and go after Ronda, well, Ronda's the sympathetic figure. What WWE didn't count on is that Ronda was not going to be the sympathetic figure and the crowd was going to like what Charlotte did. Because I could tell you, halfway through that attack with the kendo stick and everything else she was doing, there was a very loud, thank you, Charlotte. I don't know how it came through on the network. Did they mute that out, or how did that?
No, it was a very strong pro Charlotte reaction to the attack.
Okay. Because even people in the stands, people around me, were chanting, "Thank you, Charlotte." There was a except for the nut job sitting next to me. There was a real negative vibe on Ronda. So. Yeah, I don't know. I think WWE, because now, and you mentioned it, I don't know if it was with Kenny, but now you have Ronda with heat on her, fair or unfair, but she's got heat, and now you have Nia Jax with heat on her. So how is that match going to work?
Well, you mentioned Nia. Was she, you know, that opening match was interesting because there was not a lot of heat for that match except for Nia. Like, there was a hot tag to Bayley at one point that got no reaction. Like, the crowd was not reacting to anything in that match other than Nia Jax booing her. Was she, maybe besides Brock Lesnar, was she the most over heel on the show?
Totally. There was a laugh when she came out. There were boos when she was tagged in. There were boos. There was Nia sucks. Clearly, from our section, from the crowd. Again, don't know how it came across, but it was pretty loud. It's interesting that you said, is that heel heat or is that we're mad at you heat? Because I kept thinking about it. You know, heel heat is when you do something in storyline, you do something to somebody, and, you know, everybody's upset with you and whatnot. that's heel heat. To me, that's, we don't like you because of what you did here. I don't even know if that's heel heat. How would you categorize that?
It's a fine line, but it's going to make people want to see Nia Jax get beat up and lose in the ring. So I think it's legit heat that transfers to heel heat.
Because, I mean, heel heat, in a way, I mean, listen, we've watched so many characters through the years. You know, whether you admit it or not, you like heels, you know? I mean, you name the heel, Macho Man, Randy Savage, Mr. Perfect, et cetera, et cetera. In a way, we like them. You know, even though we don't like what they do in storyline, we still like them because we want to see them get theirs. Mm-hmm. I think people just want to see Nia get a fanny kicked in.
No doubt.
And, you know, I don't even know if they want to see her in the ring, to be honest with you. It was bad. It was really something. As far as Bailey is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, the trouble is, you know, people want to see Becky Lynch get comeuppance on Nia Jax now, and that can't really happen because they're on separate brands. So unless you have a little segment of those two in the Royal Rumble match, if Becky loses her title between now and then, that's really the next mm-hmm. opportunity you have to do it. So they may have to hold off on that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so many directions you can go. And like you also mentioned, too, the dynamics between Becky and Charlotte, which, by the way, I don't know if I spoke to you on Twitter all about this. I did not like what they did on SmackDown at all. I did not like the handshake. I did not like the hug. Mm-hmm. And if you notice, the crowd pretty much zero responded to it. I mean, I don't think that's what people were looking for.
Right.
I mean, that's something that, to me, I mean, think about it. Charlotte was getting booed the whole time. During Becky Lynch, during the feud with Becky Lynch. So I don't think anybody was interested in seeing her make up with Becky at that point. You know, maybe down the line, but not last week, not for a second.
Yeah, that was an odd choice, and I'm not sure what that's going to lead to, if anything. I don't know if that's going to lead to those two being back on good terms, and maybe they, you know, somehow go after Nia and Ronda together on Raw. I don't know how that would work, but, you know, this is the downside of the brand split now, is you've got this hot Becky versus Nia feud. You've got this Becky versus Ronda feud that you haven't paid off yet, and you still got Charlotte versus Ronda, which is open-ended after tonight, and you can't really pay off any of those because those are all Raw versus SmackDown matches, and you know, you can't organically do that when they're on separate brands and when you've spent so much time saying Survivor Series is the one night of year when Raw takes on SmackDown. So, you know, there are problems that WWE has, good problems in some way, bad problems in another. Frank, I want to go to the actual crowd reaction overall tonight. It seemed like a pretty quiet crowd throughout most of the show. You were there live. How rowdy was the crowd compared to some of the other crowds you've been in?
I wouldn't say it was a rowdy crowd. I mean, they were into certain things. The first match, I'm not even going to count the pre-show. The women's match, initially, they were into, and then you can hear a pin drop about 5 minutes in. You mentioned Bailey. She's basically buried, okay? Get the put the shovel away because she's done. I mean, I don't know what more they could do with her. She was, at one point, I think she was working with Sonya Deville. Yeah, that's what it was. And, you know, and as much as, I mean, you and I would be interested in that match, nobody was buying it. So she's pretty much done. As far as the next match, what was after? Just refresh my memory. What was after the
would have been women's Rollins match? Nakamura.
Rollins Nakamura. Yeah, that people were actually in for that. There was a dueling. There was a dueling Nakamura Rollins chant. You can hear Nakamura burn it down, and that went on. That went on a few times actually throughout the match. And initially, when Nakamura's music was playing, the crowd was singing to it. So it makes me wonder, and the first thing I thought about was, I wonder if his heel turn has basically been a bust. Because he, you know, I got the sense tonight, maybe this is just one crowd. Maybe I have to see a few more crowds with Nakamura. but I get the sense the heel turn hasn't taken, and they still want him to be a babyface. I mean, they might have to turn a babyface, because you got who's a babyface now on SmackDown? You know, you got what, AJ Styles, if he's even still going to be there, right? So, you got a shortage on that side. So that match they were into, I think the tag team match was after that, right, with AOP and the Bar.
Correct.
That's the one I got up for, and I didn't realize. Thanks to Mike McMahon, who tweeted it out, or he retweeted that Enzo Amore was in the crowd.
Yeah.
And I didn't even see it. I missed it. I wish I didn't get up for that. I wish I stayed in the crowd for that. And supposedly there was a little bit of a pop. By the way, why is he having Drake Maverick pee his pants? What is that? What's that accomplishing?
Frank,
seriously.
That's playing to the audience of one.
I mean, I got coupons if he wants diapers. I mean, you know, I got three kids. If he wants, I got plenty of coupons.
That's a generous offer, Frank.
Nonsense. Yeah, well, you know, that's I like to give. That's me. So, to be honest, I went to the concession stand, and you know, there was no reaction to that match at all. So. That was pretty close to the seats. The men's match followed. Drew actually got a decent reaction when he came out, which I thought was interesting. Following what's been going on the last couple of weeks, I thought that was he almost got a little bit of a baby face pop, and people actually wanted to see him in the match. Mm. So I thought that was interesting, and then. As the match went on, crowd was kind of out of it. Braun Strowman, for some reason, when he got when Shane went through him on the table, somehow he made his way across to the other side of the ring, and he was laying down for about 15 minutes. I don't know how that works out, but you know, that's that. And then the crowd was a little bit into Shane. You know, unfortunately, and maybe this is just, you know, this is the McMahons, but when he went for the coast-to-coast, the crowd popped for it. Mm-hmm. When he did it to Ziggler, and he did it to Lashley was enough. Braun stopped him. That's when Braun got up, miraculously, and stopped Shane as he only flew halfway across. If you notice, he only flew halfway across the ring. He didn't go all the way across. He made sure he only went halfway so Braun could catch him. So
mm-hmm.
the crowd kind of popped for that. Let's see. Buddy Murphy and Mustafa Ali. That was a good match. That was solid. I tweeted out, and I think you did as well, that it's good to see these guys get on the main card. It's it's good that they're not stuffed on the pre-show. And it started out a little slow, to be honest with you, for me, for my taste. But that's me. A couple of people were getting antsy in our section, just kind of wondering where it was going to go. But then it picked up, and that was fine. And I'm sure you heard the 205 chant.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did that come across
on TV? Okay, good.
Talk about the progression of the audience reaction to this match. I mean, did you get a sense that people even knew who these guys were? You know, was it a cold reaction to them at first, and then, you know, fans just got into the action by the end of it? How was the progression of the reaction to that match?
To be honest, I think it was a cold reaction just by nature of them being cruiserweights. Mm. I think the cruiserweights just have a stain, you know, no matter how you slice the pie. But, you know, it's one of those things that you have to watch to appreciate. And, you know, when I do get a chance, I've tried to keep 205 in my rotation, and it's, you know, it's kind of hard with all the other stuff that you got to watch.
Yeah.
But when you actually start getting into the matches, you get into them. And these two guys, between Ali and between Murphy, these are two of the solid guys they have on the show. So I think it was something that they warmed up to. I mean, everybody in my section knew who they were. The one next to me, you know, Nutjob next to me was chanting for Mustafa Ali, and of course I was chanting for Murphy, but that's another story. they warmed up to it as the match went on, and you got the 205 chant. There were people in my section chanting 205, so I definitely think they got into the match.
Support
support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Cool. And you know, we talked about the reaction to Ronda and Charlotte. How about the main event? The heat segment on Daniel Bryan went quite a while at first before Bryan started his comeback. What was the reaction to Brock Lesnar's dominance in the first several minutes? And what was the reaction to Daniel Bryan since the heel turn? I mean, this was the first TV he's done since that heel turn on Tuesday. Were fans booing him? Were they cheering him? Were they cheering him, but not as loudly as they did when he was a babyface? So talk about the reaction to Lesnar's long heat segment on Bryan, and then the reaction to Daniel Bryan.
So people were not into the long segment with Lesnar. They were not into that. You started to hear boring chants. I heard it in my section. I, for one, particularly was just, you know, I wasn't digging it. It kind of rang back to, I was thinking of Lesnar Cena from SummerSlam a couple of years ago when he hit him with how many suplexes. So people were not buying that. As far as the reaction to Daniel Bryan, now initially he was getting cheered when he came out, then he got booed when he started doing the yes, yes, and then he stopped. People didn't like that. And then he kind of did this weird thing. I don't know if he did it. I don't know if it came across on TV, but like he was coming down the aisle and then he ducked a little bit and then he popped his head back up. I don't understand what he was trying to do. Maybe he was trying to avoid the camera. I don't know. But I thought that was a little bit weird. But the reaction was purely negative for him. Then you mentioned the heat segment with Lesnar. I talked about that. Then when Bryan kicked him in the prize jewels, that actually got a positive reaction. And everything that Bryan was doing afterwards got a positive reaction. Okay. So, again, confusing dynamics, which seems to be the theme of this whole show and seems to be the theme of the last, you know, this past week. So, you know, people were into that. And then, you know, Lesnar got the comeback, got the win, and people were booing Daniel Bryan again. He held up, like he had this kind of like sadistic look on his face, and then he stood up with the title, and people weren't buying it. So he basically went from face to heel to face to heel all in one night.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the crowd reactions going forward to Daniel Bryan. What was the crowd size like tonight? Was it a full house?
Yeah, I didn't notice an empty seat. It was pretty full. I didn't see anything tarped off, to be honest with you. And you know what? I probably should have looked a little closer for that. I think I was just so caught up in the moment because I've never been to the Staples Center. I mean, I've been to a couple of arenas outside of New York for other stuff, indoor arenas, that is. Like, I once went to a Nashville Predators game a few years ago, and then I went to a Panthers game down in Miami. This is back in like 06. So I was kind of like caught up in the moment, just kind of taking in the whole stadium, but I didn't notice anything tromped off. The seats, now my view was fine. I ended up, I sat in section 316, which I thought was kind of humorous.
Yeah.
But the view was fine. The seats stink. I think they designed it for toddlers up in that section because I could barely fit. I mean, you know, I'm not exactly light on my feet, but, you know, I should at least fit in the seat. And these seats were not comfortable at all.
Okay.
So they got to do something about that. But, I mean, it was full. And, overall, like I said, I think people enjoyed it because it was Survivor Series. But I will say I was a little disappointed because I didn't feel like the crowd. I feel like the crowd should be a little more rabid. Because this is one of the big four. I mean, let's be honest. This is one of the big four, and I didn't feel that passion. I didn't feel that that connection from the crowd.
Yeah, I think that's historically true of the Staples Center and the LA area of reactions. Last question, Frank, before I let you go. What were the merchandise numbers as far as when you looked out into the sea of people, who was most well represented by T-shirts or any kind of clothing that people wore?
The Bullet Club.
Oh.
I saw quite a bit of Bullet Club.
That makes sense in LA.
Elite. I just got that too. I saw a couple of Bullet Club. Suplex City, good amount of Suplex City shirts. Good amount of Balor shirts too.
Okay.
Good amount of the multicolor, the Balor Club, shirts. Little AJ Styles, some Seth Rollins. The guy I was talking to, the row in front of me, had a Seth Rollins shirt. I got Seth on myself because, you know, I'm representing Raw.
Sure.
And I'm so glad they won this battle, brand supremacy. By the way, not for nothing. Who cares that Raw won 6-0? Who cares,
Frank,
about that?
You're kind of like Corey Graves. You write the previews for Raw and SmackDown for PWTorch.com. So you're kind of on both sides.
That's right. I have to defend both brands.
Yeah.
Exactly. And by the way, I don't know if you saw Sean Radican's tweet. He goes, I guess Fox must be pretty upset. It took me a few minutes to figure that out. And I says, that's why, because Raw won 6-0.
Yeah.
But on a serious note, though, who cares about that? You know what I mean? Like, this whole thing with this brand supremacy, who cares? I mean, honestly, who won last year? I forgot who won last year.
Probably Raw. it's always a safe bet to bet on Raw.
Yeah, I'm more interested in the storylines coming out of this. I mean, I'm dying to see that Strowman-Corbin feud. I thought, it's funny because a friend of mine didn't realize, and I got to tell you this because it's interesting. He put a post up on our Facebook page. He goes, I bet you Braun cashes in his money in the bank tonight, switches brands and goes to SmackDown and wins the WWE Championship and then faces Brock. And I responded, I said, that all sounds well and good. The problem is Braun cashed in his money in the bank already, and he didn't realize it. Mm. And it goes to show you with WWE storytelling, if you remember, he cashed it in September, and, you know, he did it for the Hell in a Cell, and after that, never got mentioned. He was never angry that he cashed it in for nothing, and it's almost like, you know, people forgot about it. So I thought that – but anyway, the reason I said that was I thought – just to add a little spice to tonight, I'm like, what if Braun threatens Corbin, okay, just off of what happened in the match tonight, you know, because Corbin attacked him and, you know, whatever. What if he threatens Corbin and says, I want Lesnar tonight? In other words, after the Brock Bryan match, what if he threatens Corbin and says, I want Brock Lesnar, I want a shot at the Universal Championship right now, and, you know, goes out and beats Lesnar. That actually would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, it would have added even more talking points coming out of this show, which I don't know that we can handle any more than what we got tonight. Just you know, just based out of the Charlotte Ronda Rousey match, there's so many things to discuss about that one. Frank, appreciate you calling in, giving us our live report from the Staples Center in Los Angeles. Hope to talk to you again, and for those of you listening, you can read Frank's Raw and SmackDown previews every Monday and Tuesday on PWTorch.com. Frank, thanks for calling in.
I appreciate it, Greg. Thanks for that plug, and always a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. We'll talk to Frank again soon. We'll have him on as a co-host soon, I'm sure, here on Wrestling Night in America. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. If you'd like to talk, make sure to press 1 on your dial pad so you show up in my queue as wanting to chat and give your opinions or thoughts on Survivor Series. If you are not a frequent listener to Wrestling Night in America, we are on the air every Sunday night, most Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern. if there is a WWE pay-per-view, we go on the air right after that pay-per-view ends, just as we're doing right now with Survivor Series. But we are on the air for about 90 minutes every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, Wrestling Night in America, PWTorchLivecast.com. We talk all the big events in pro wrestling. So this coming Sunday, we'll be previewing already TLC pay-per-view. We'll be talking about the fallout from Survivor Series on Raw and SmackDown. And all the other big shows from Impact Wrestling, New Japan, just so many big shows going on. We try to fit it all into 90 minutes. Sometimes we can't, but we do our best here on Wrestling Night in America. You can also follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. I tweet during Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views. You can find my tweets about Survivor Series tonight as we went along with that show. The next caller is the 304 area code. 304, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Wallace from West Virginia.
Wallace, good to talk to you tonight. What did you think of Survivor Series?
Well, I by the end of it, I was hooked. Those last two matches really just caught me. You know, the story, the emotion of it. I got to say, this is probably different than what a lot of people, but I enjoyed the story and the emotion of those two matches even more than NXT TakeOver, because I've seen a million good matches in WWE, but it's rare that you're seeing good storytelling and good emotion in WWE.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, TakeOver provides you those high-quality matches. We're in an era in WWE where you can turn on Monday Night Raw every week and see, you know, 2-3-star matches every week, you know. So if you watch as much WWE where you're watching TV every week, you may just get burned out on good matches and your eyes sort of glaze over on good matches. You need something more to hook you in. And I think that's, like you mentioned, Wallace, that's what WWE was going for here in these final two matches. Draw out the story, draw out the emotion in the viewer so they could connect beyond just match quality.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I know you guys have been talking a lot about heels and faces tonight. That was actually what I was originally going to talk about anyway, is that I think I feel like there's like two camps. There's the camp that says, well, heels and faces don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And then there's the camp that still wants to hold on to the traditional heel and face roles. But what I've kind of, you know, and give me your thoughts on this, my opinion is that it's not that heels and faces don't exist anymore. It's that what the crowd considers a heel or a face has just changed. And you can get the crowd just as hot cheering or booing for somebody. You just have to get rid of things like the white meat baby face, which just doesn't get over anymore, or the badass heel doesn't get over because the badass heel is now a baby face. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that it's not so much, you know, if WWE could kind of harness kind of what the new baby face and heel roles are, they could continue to get people booed and cheered consistently rather than the whole, you know, 50-50 crowd chanting and really capture that emotion.
I think you hit on it. I think it's not that heels and faces don't exist anymore. I think it's just what heels and faces are is evolving. And what I look for more than anything else, more than trying to label someone a heel or label someone a babyface, is I look for consistency of character. That is huge for me. So, for example, Becky Lynch doing what she did to Charlotte at SummerSlam. In traditional historical precedence in wrestling, that was a heel turn. Now, you could make the argument that, no, that wasn't a heel turn. That was just Becky as a babyface being fed up with what she thought was preferential treat given by Charlotte. That was her taking on a darker tone in an attempt to create opportunities for herself that she wouldn't otherwise get. And I would be totally on board with that. But when she cut that first promo on SmackDown, where she ripped into the fans and questioned their allegiance of her, that's where they lost me. That's where I said, this is not consistent with the Becky Lynch character to do that. That was, you know, that was evidence of a heel turn, because that is what WWE does when they turn popular babyfaces heel. They have them guarantee that heel reaction by having them turn on the crowd, which 99% of the time it works. It did not work with Becky Lynch, and I think WWE learned their lesson because they really didn't go down that road again with Becky Lynch's promo. So more than anything else, I look for consistency of character, and that's where they lost me with Becky Lynch, although they've gotten her back on the right track. So more so than labeling someone a heel or face, you could just say, is this consistent? Can I buy this person doing this? And yes, I could buy Becky Lynch doing what she did at SummerSlam. I could buy the anger and the resentment that had built up in her. That doesn't necessarily make her a heel, but then when she went against the fans, I mean, that's a heel move, and that's, you know, that took me out of the moment. So I do think we are in a different era where, and I go back to what I originally said, we have faces and heels, but they're not as well defined, or they're not put in the box that we used to put them in.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that, you know, the crowd looks at them not as real people. They look at them as TV characters. And if you kind of think of how you react to different TV characters, sometimes you're watching a TV show, you almost kind of throw your traditional morality out the window if you can kind of get behind a certain person. And I think sometimes if they think, you know, the WWE machine is behind somebody and that's not who they want the WWE machine to be behind, then they're going to cheer one person, boo another person, no matter what they do.
I also think people, because WWE has made it a point to hammer home the idea that we are here to entertain you, I think the fans cheer for people who entertain them, whether it's entertaining them as a heel or entertaining them as a babyface. That's why Elias got cheered as a heel, because he was an entertaining heel. That's why Becky Lynch got cheered when she attacked Charlotte. That's why Charlotte got cheered when she attacked Ronda tonight, because what they were doing was entertaining to the fans in the audience, and how they acted was entertaining. So I think because WWE has put such a premium on entertaining the fans, and we are here to entertain you, that is our number one goal, the fans are reacting accordingly to that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you on that.
Yeah. Wallace, what else did you think of Survivor Series tonight? Any overall thoughts, maybe a thumbs up or thumbs down on the show as a whole?
To me, it's a thumbs up, because as soon as those last two matches came on, I instantly forgot anything that happened on the rest of the show, and those won me over so much that it was almost like the rest of the show really didn't matter. So for me, it's really hard to rate it, you know, like a thumbs in the middle and say, oh, well, you know, the last two matches were really good, but the first part was kind of so-so, because, you know, sometimes when the main events win you over big time, it's just hard not to feel good about the show as a whole.
Yeah, the main events traditionally are the most important parts of the show, so you tend to put a little more weight on that as far as rating the overall show. If it's a good main event, if it's a good story, a good match, you tend to weight that a little heavier in the positive direction, and the same goes for the opposite. I think the problem is, for me, because the shows are so long now, if you were doing a 2.5-hour, even a 3-hour show, and the main event was really good, then that could heavily skew in that direction, because it was, you know, 1/6 of the show. Whereas now that the shows are 4 hours, 4.5 hours, that small amount of time you have for the main event sometimes doesn't tend to outweigh anymore the 3.5 or other 4 hours of the show that you have to sit through. So I think the length of shows that WWE does now sort of waters down the idea that the main events are as important as they once were.
Yeah, I think for me it's more just the emotion coming out of it, you know. I don't know that, I know you guys tend to really analyze, you know, things and look at it from match by match. To me, you know, I kind of think, you know, how did I feel coming out of the show? And when I feel really good coming out of the show because, you know, maybe the early part of the show, you know, wasn't bad per se, wasn't, you know, great, and then the main events were really good, then I feel like I come out of it feeling really good overall, and it's hard for me to even give it a thumb sideways just because, to me, the main events really did outweigh everything, even with it being such a long show. It was just, for whatever reason, they, you know, maybe it's just tonight, or maybe it's just, you know, depends on the show, I guess, for me, but they really just kind of captured the emotion of it and really got me so invested that it's hard for me to not feel good about the show as a whole.
Well, that's the great thing about analyzing this genre, is that there's no one way to do it that's correct. You know, it's however you personally feel about it and however you want to look at the show and look at the matches, and there's no wrong way to do it. So I completely understand where you're coming from. Anything else about the show you'd like to discuss tonight?
No, I think that's basically it.
Great. Thanks for calling in, Wallace. Good to talk to you tonight.
Yeah, definitely. Good talk to you, Greg.
All right. Wallace from West Virginia drops off. We have some room in the call bank if you want to call in, 515-605-9345. Otherwise, we are going to the last call I have in the queue for the night. It is the 313 area code. 313, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, Greg. It's Hendrick from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Oh, pretty good. I pretty much enjoyed the show, but I was kind of surprised. One thing no one's brought up that I've been listening to is I really expected a major run-in between either Dean Ambrose or AJ Styles, or maybe even Randy Orton.
Yeah.
And saw none of that. Those are three major players, and they weren't on the show at all. So what do you think about them not being on the show, and were you expecting a run-in?
I was. I would have expected at least one of them to make an appearance, even if it wasn't a run-in per se. I would have expected at least one of them to show up in some capacity on this show. If you're a fan of SmackDown and you don't like the way SmackDown was treated by the booking tonight, I think you could point to the absence of AJ Styles. You can point to the absence of Becky Lynch. You can point to the absence of Randy Orton. Those are three of the top stars, maybe the three top stars, you could make the argument, on SmackDown, and they didn't have a match tonight. So maybe that will be the excuse that Paige and Shane McMahon use on Tuesday night to defend SmackDown's record here tonight. But, yeah, I think especially maybe not so much AJ Styles interfering, because he's a babyface and that wouldn't be a very babyface thing to do, although it would be in his way getting back at Daniel Bryan for Daniel Bryan cheating in his match. But I would have definitely expected Dean Ambrose to interfere. And coming into the show, as I said at the top, Shinsuke Nakamura, I thought that was an opportunity for him to win for the Blue Brand over Seth Rollins, and they could have used that opportunity for Dean Ambrose to interfere in Seth Rollins' match to perhaps cost him the match. But look, I'm not going to sit here and say, gee, I wish they had done more interference in matches, because Lord knows WWE does enough of that throughout the 52 weeks out of the year. So I'm not going to complain about the clean finishes on this show.
Yeah, no, I understand totally. But I was just shocked to not see at least Dean Ambrose, obviously. But and the other thing is, I mean, this is a real sidebar, but I was kind of disappointed in the direction they went with the women's Survivor Series team, where there's like, you know, maybe going to be like, I was hoping for a call up. Like there was a question mark on the SmackDown team, but then they even made it more like two other question marks on the Raw team. I was like, oh, well, maybe we'll get a call up. Maybe Nikki Cross will show up or something fun, but no, nothing like that. But
my expectation was that to fill the SmackDown slot, I thought they would use an NXT wrestler. I thought that would have been a fine opportunity to bring someone up, even if it's just for a one-off. I thought that would have been a nice showcase for them. Mandy Rose, given the storyline that she was on SmackDown a couple weeks ago and deriding the women who were selected over her, I thought, you know, I thought that was that fit that storyline, but I didn't think it came into play as much during the match as I thought it would. You know, the women hanging her out to dry for the things they said about her, I didn't think that really came into play as much as I expected. As for the Raw side, Sasha Banks and Bayley certainly deserve the spotlight and deserve to be in a match at Survivor Series. So even though Ruby Riott and Natalya were taken out, and that could have been an opportunity to use one or two NXT women, I don't mind Sasha Banks and Bayley getting that opportunity at Survivor Series and being put in that match.
What? Yeah, I don't mind either. I guess I was just kind of hoping for Nikki Cross on any of them.
Yeah.
Well, that's all. All right. Thank you, my man.
Yeah.
Hang in there, and you have a good night.
Thanks, you too. Appreciate the call. And that will do it for us here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. We made it in under 90 minutes. So thank you for everybody calling in. Appreciate the calls. As I said, we're here every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, unless there is an Impact Wrestling pay-per-view. The next one, I believe, is in January, the Homecoming Show, which will come to us from Nashville. WWE will be having their next pay-per-view next month, TLC, in December. So that will be the next opportunity I will have to talk to you guys about a WWE pay-per-view. We will go on the air right after that pay-per-view, as we did tonight for Survivor Series. Every other Sunday, we are here 8 p.m. Eastern to talk about the big events in pro wrestling. So over the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk a lot about TLC and Homecoming for Impact Wrestling. So again, thank you so much for joining me, and appreciate everyone calling in. And we'll talk to you next time, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.